Hey, and welcome back to Hallmark's The Spot, your favorite podcast with your favorite hosts.
I was waiting for you to say Jim.
No.
And Ellie.
Ladies first.
Oh, Ellie.
And I'm Jim.
I'm not used to that.
Yeah, I noticed. Yes, Hallmark's The Spot, the Hallmark Movie Review Podcast, part of the Damn Junior Podcast Network.
Yes.
You can check out our sister show, which I'm also on, called Destroy All Movies.
I used to be on it, but I was kicked off.
You were not kicked off.
They decided bros before hosts, so.
This is a Hallmark podcast.
Maybe we should have talked about that before we brought it up.
Destroy All Movies and Hallmark's The Spot. Find them at damshow.co.
That's
our
right.
Our email address, if you wish to send that out, is destroymail@gmail.com. And
you're going to lead with that? They haven't even heard the show. They don't even know if there's something they want to say to us.
I'm going to say it at the end of the show, too.
Okay.
So you're going to say it at the beginning, and then I'll say it at the end.
That's very thorough.
Yes.
You're well-trained.
Yes, we'll be talking about today. Our main review is How to Train Your Husband. One of the greatest Hallmark movies ever.
Not. Oh, my God.
We're also going to review a classic.
Yeah.
Hallmark Christmas movie.
That's right.
Because we want to inject some more Christmas into this podcast.
That's right.
Since we Christmas movies are the ones we love the most, as many of you out there also love.
Yep.
So you have nothing to say.
Well, I was waiting for yep the dings.
Yes.
I got the dings.
Yeah, I know.
Ding twice.
Yes, we're.
It is true that we're gonna review one of our favorite classic Christmas movies.
Which one is it?
Christmas Under Wraps, baby.
Christmas Under Wraps. Yes, that's a
where I thought Brian Doyle Murray was the name of the mean character, not the Santa Claus guy, for like forever.
What mean character?
Maine.
Oh, the Maine character.
Which I'm almost embarrassed to admit, but I'll admit it. This is a safe space. I don't even know the name of that guy with the big ears.
Neither do I. I'll look it up right before okay. We do the review.
I want to talk about this terrible movie. I'm sorry.
How to Train Your Husband, starring Julie Gonzalo.
Yes.
And Jonathan Chase.
Right. Now, Julie Gonzalo, I like. She was in Falling for Vermont or Falling in Vermont. She was the successful young adult fiction fantasy writer who borrowed her sister's car, got into an accident, got like amnesia, and then lived with that vet for a while and fell in love with him and his kids.
He wasn't a vet.
He was a vet. Was he a pediatrician?
You're conflating
Christmas to remember
with that.
He was a pediatrician,
right?
Though.
And she had amnesia. We're not going to go through the whole plot of that movie.
No, I'm just saying that we like Julie Gonzalo.
Yes,
well, she was in one of our favorite non-Christmas movies, Falling for Vermont.
Oh, Falling for Vermont. I'm gonna blow your mind right here.
No,
about Julie Gonzalo.
Okay, Julie.
She's an Argentine actress.
Oh,
she's Argentinian.
Wow, that does blow my mind. She's not Canadian or anything.
No. I'm, and she was on the soap opera Dallas.
Wow.
Wow.
Dallas, that, you mean the actual, with who shot JR?
Yeah, but the second iteration of that.
Oh, there was another iteration. Sorry, everyone. I don't know these things.
Yes, there was a remake show, a
When did that happen?
A reimagining.
The early 2000s?
A few years back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When I didn't have a TV.
It was on the CW or something.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. So, Julie Gonzalo and...
And what? I said the guy's name.
The guy...
Jonathan Chase.
I was going to say, I don't think I've seen him in any other Hallmark movies. Do you know if he's been in others, or did we just not, like,
remember? He may have been in others, but I don't remember.
He wasn't in a Christmas movie that we adored. We know that. Okay, so
the story is this woman who's a relationship expert, you know, writes books and stuff, and what was...
She's trying to stump her book about, like... Your second husband, how to find your second husband,
right.
Or your second husband's better than your first, or
no, it was how to find your second husband.
That's not Freudian.
And she's hawking that book, and she's trying to write a new one, but she's got a kind of writer's block.
Yep.
There was a big party for her and her husband. Showed up late and without a suit on.
She was getting an award.
Yeah. So she got all pissy about it. And
is that what happened?
Yeah. And then she goes to her friend, "You got such a great marriage. How do you do it?" And her friend tells her that she trained her husband like a dog.
Yeah. She's a dog trainer. She has, like, puppies for adoption.
Right.
And then Julie Gonzalo's character starts to see that she feeds, the friend feeds her husband treats and rewards him for, quote unquote, good behavior. But I haven't had a chance to say the one thing that I want to give Hallmark kudos for.
What?
Kudos to them for like, trying to do a movie where... It's kind of a negative storyline that her marriage is in trouble.
Right.
And she's struggling and everything's not like awesome. It's not the usual tension between two vast personality differences meeting each other for the first time. They're two vast personality differences who've been married for a long time. But yeah. So anyway, I'm just going to say... It was a new look for them.
Well, if this is the result of them doing that, I no longer want them doing that.
No, I don't. You know, it's so funny because they had just recently doubled down on the, we're your source for like feel good entertainment and happy ever after movies and all that stuff. And then they put out this movie that was like a downer. It was kind of depressing.
Right. So she starts...
she's a marriage counselor, couples counselor.
So she starts to train her husband in writing a book about the experience, you know, the similarities between changing your husband's behavior and changing your
dog's
behavior.
She starts by doing research in the library on dog training books.
Right. And then...
It's kind of demeaning.
Yeah, and things are going well, and then all of a sudden he shows up at her office and...
No, this is after he took off. So that was the...
That's right. That's
that
right.
Was
it
the,
happened after she
the he not
took
super,
off.
You know...
He wanted to go on vacation.
He wanted to take her to Paris.
Yes, for...
And she's like, I just can't do that right now.
Yes.
And then how much time did she goof off while he was in Paris?
Yeah. So he went by himself to Paris because the marriage ain't doing so well.
Yeah. And then put it social media. Now, I'm not saying that just because people take separate vacations, their marriage isn't doing well. Sometimes people are into extreme sports and their spouse is not, and they want to fulfill that part of themselves and not scare the crap out of their spouse. Okay, I can see that. But this was like more, they left it very... tenuous. She waited days before she tried to contact him. He didn't contact her. Then when she texted him, it was all very much like, "Hi, how are you doing? Are you enjoying yourself?" or whatever, very clinical. Yeah. And then it got to the point where they showed that he was like, somebody, wasn't he going to type like, "love you," and he deleted it?
Yeah.
So, you know, they did a good job of painting a marriage in trouble.
Again, I don't want that.
No, thanks. Thanks, but no thanks.
I want lighthearted rom-com. Yeah. I don't want this.
Yeah. Not only that, we think that it happened that they were taping it. They taped it before the whole quarantine situation. And then the sound that we had was very much
ambient. They couldn't do any post-production. You know, what they call in the biz ADR, where they will redub their lines, and they went with the raw audio from when they filmed it. So there's a ton of background noise sometimes.
Yep.
In this thing.
Yeah, but they did, you know, shoot for an actual location shoot. So they were in Boston or something like Boston.
Right.
They were supposed to be in Boston. And you could hear all kinds of background music.
No, it looked like it was Boston. It was.
It wasn't Toronto, Boston.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, they were standing in front of landmarks and stuff like that.
Yeah, no. So it was, I have to say, like, the shooting of it and all that was good. And it wasn't like I was distracted by the fact that I didn't think they were in Boston, but the sound wasn't great and the story was terrible. So, yeah. You know.
So we're not even finished talking about the story. Sorry. So the...
big surprise. I thought it was terrible. So.
Okay. So he comes back from Paris. Yes. She is fostering a dog. This whole dog subplot.
Henry,
the name of the dog. And the husband overhears
the friend
talking about her picking up Henry. And he goes like, "Who's this Henry?" And she goes, "Oh, nobody, you know." And
can we say why? Because her mother, who's a judge, played by Perry Gilpin, you may remember Roz from Frasier, she said, "Oh, well, you can't make him think that he didn't miss anything while he was gone," which spawned this whole lie about, "Oh, Henry, he's just a friend. Oh, here's my dog, George."
Right.
Another terrible sign of a bad marriage.
Yeah, she tries to make him think that... trying to get him jealous over the imaginary Henry.
It did work. Because it had him going into her office, as you were about to say before.
And then he finds out that Henry's the dog. She's training him like a dog. He starts reading her book that she's writing. And he rightfully gets pissed off. Yep. And
not only that, though, he costs her a client named Henry or George. I think it was Henry. Sorry.
Yeah.
There's no mute button on my microphone.
No, the guy's name wasn't Henry.
Was it George?
No, it was neither.
No, it was. It was one of those names because he's like, "Who's Henry?" He's like, "I am." And then he was like, "You're Henry?" And he was all peeved.
Oh.
Yeah, when he went in with the friend looking through her computer and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And Henry showed up for his office visit early, his therapy appointment.
Okay. So
I'm just saying.
He gets pissed off and leaves and takes his best friend with him.
Right. And they're living in some flea bag motel.
Yeah.
And the dog trainer's like, "Don't worry, he'll be back because I've trained him."
Yeah. And she was right, because he does go running back.
That's right. He's like, "This place smells. You're a jerk. You made me sleep on the couch. And I want my special, super fancy chocolate chip cookies that she makes." Yeah.
So the other two, they make up. I'm sorry. Smooches jump 5 years later. They've got two kids, and she's got the new book, How to Choose Your Second Husband First.
And if we just, like, work through everything, everything would be great. You know, I can't even.
Happily ever after. Except for us, because it left a bad taste in our mouth.
That's right.
It just was terrible. It was terrible all the way around.
Well, it's like, it's painful to watch a bad marriage and to see her making so many mistakes that are all caused by a lack of communication when she's a therapist. Right. So I've seen things that say that, like, psychiatrists have another psychiatrist that they go to, right? So they're always doing the work on themselves while they're helping other people.
Right.
This chick was so, like, dead and numb to the fact that she was in a terrible marriage because she was all stuck on looking good. Like, she wanted him to be the perfect guy always to make her look good instead of allowing him to be who he was.
Right.
And none of the work on her own marriage, which I understand, like, physicians can't necessarily heal themselves. But I'm just curious, do marriage counselors also have a therapist who helps them work through their stuff so that they can really be clear to help other people like psychiatrists do?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So it left a lot of questions besides a bad taste in my mouth. But yeah, it's painful to watch someone ignoring their spouse, not listening to what he says, not allowing him.
And doing obviously stupid things.
Yeah. And, like, go ahead, go to Paris. I can't go. Instead of saying, like, let me see if I can make this work.
Yeah, so, you know, the story was bad. The writing was terrible.
Julie Gonzalo was good still. But she, you know.
Yeah.
You can only do
so much with what you got.
Yeah.
Post-production was terrible. And
we
just hope in the upcoming...
The June ones.
Hallmark movies that they didn't go with anything like this.
I don't think so. Yeah. One of them had dancing.
Yeah. I think this was the worst Hallmark movie that I've seen.
Wow.
That's supposed to be a romantic comedy.
Now I'm trying to think.
Not like a Hallmark Movies and Miracles.
Yeah, because there are plenty of bad ones of those.
Yeah.
As you all know, dear listeners.
Mistletoe Promise.
Are we really thinking? I don't think that was a Movies and Mysteries.
Oh, Mistletoe.
Are you talking about the Mistletoe Secret or the Mistletoe Promise?
No, the Mistletoe Secret thing.
That was a regular one, I think.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't have any God whatever in it.
No, it didn't. But I'm saying no, that was not a Hallmark movie. That wasn't a lighthearted.
The Mistletoe Secret?
The one with Cameron Matheson.
Oh, no. No, now we're talking about something different. Cameron Matheson wasn't any mistletoe.
Or the Christmas
Ornament.
The
Christmas Club?
No, the Christmas Ornament.
That wasn't Cameron Matheson. Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was Cameron Matheson.
Oh, that's a movie, some
mysteries. And that Maudlin broad.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the Maudlin woman. I forget her name.
No, but she's also in that, like, movies that she's in a mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember her name either.
Cast, what's her name? Kelly Martin.
Yeah, that's it, Kelly Martin.
Yeah, she's...
No, but Mistletoe Secret is the one with your favorite Kelly Pickler.
And
Tyler.
Yeah, that's horrible. But it's not.
And then Mistletoe.
It's not How to Train Your Husband
No. And Mistletoe Promise is the one with Lemon Breland and right. Nostril Dude.
I know.
McFarlane?
Yeah. Nostril Dude. So
you can see his nostrils, everyone. Just saying. Now that we've told you, you will never unsee them.
We talked about Nacho Luna on a couple of previous shows. It's not like it's new.
People may not be listening to our whole catalog.
of three shows? Yeah.
Well, three once we put this one out, right?
Right.
So anyway, this was, it was tough.
So what do you rate it? 1 to 5?
1.5.
1.5.
Well, because I have to say, like, they can't just put out the same movie 52 weeks a year. And so they tried something different. However, I feel like it was degrading to men to compare them to puppies, number one. And that it didn't, I felt like even at the end when they got back together, it wasn't not satisfying, but it wasn't like they had really sat there and done the work either.
Right. It felt
it was like, forced.
Like, we got to wrap this up quick.
Yeah. Like, okay, you're back from Europe and you like the dog and now you've uncovered the secret. And then you stayed away and realized that you miss your wife. And that, well, I guess the big reveal, should we spoil it? Spoiler alert. The big reveal is she realized that she was the one being trained to give him positive reinforcement.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was terrible.
Spoiler alert. It's been on already.
Hopefully it'll never be on again.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how there's a marathon this weekend.
Oh, there is? There's
Yeah. Memorial Day weekend.
What is the marathon? It may be after Memorial Day if you...
It's happening...
No. I mean, when they're hearing
this. They hear this? Oh, we don't have any plans. We're still in lockdown. Yeah. You won't... Okay, well, he did get a new saw, everyone, so... Yeah. He might be, like, excited about that, using that to, you know, trim branches. Yeah. 1.5. Although I kind of want to give it 1.
I'm giving it 1.
Okay, and I'm more optimistic, so I'll stick with the 1.5.
And that's only because I can only go that low.
You can't go to 1/2?
No.
You don't do halves. So what would you like to talk about?
Christmas Under Wraps.
Christmas Under Wraps.
One of our favorite sleeping movies.
That's right.
And by sleeping, we mean that before we go to bed.
We put the movie on.
I mean, once we're in bed.
We put the movie on.
We'll put one of our Christmas movies that we enjoy watching. And ride that one off into slumberland.
That's right. And Christmas Under Wraps fits the bill. Yep. Although pretty much now we fast forward through the San Francisco, her obtuseness. Oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm a doctor and I'm only going to apply for one fellowship, the Charlestown Memorial Fellowship that my dad got. And I knew I was going to follow in his footsteps. And I have this boyfriend. And before I move to Boston, he's going to move with me and we're going to be totally committed. And so they go out to dinner and da, da, da.
He breaks up with her. She doesn't get the fellowship. And she whines to her father, who says, I'll pull some strings and get you in.
Somewhere. And of course, she goes to her schools or whatever.
Yeah, her mother is trying to tell her.
Follow your heart.
You know, you have your life too planned out.
That's right. You got to allow some time and space for creativity.
So she goes to the doctor fellowship office. And,
the career planning and placement, I like to think of it, as it was always termed in my school.
And then...
And they talk, but the whole thing is she was edged out by a guy who did Doctors Without Borders. And they liked that out of the box thinking. So she was listening and the woman said, look, if you had applied for more than one, you wouldn't have had a problem. But you have been now not even edged out, but you've been any fellowship has been given to people who are like less accomplished than you are. But she's like, oh wait, a little Santa magic maybe. Yeah. Oh wait, what's this? Oh, Garland, Alaska is looking for a physician.
Yeah, and it just popped up on her screen.
And she happened to describe it as an out-of-the-box experience, which caught Candace Cameron Bure's...
Yes, we didn't say this starred Candace Cameron Bure.
When did it come out?
And David O'Donnell.
David O'Donnell.
Is the dude.
I've never seen him since in a Hallmark movie. But you can correct me.
2014 is 2014. Christmas Under Wraps.
Wow.
Are you going to talk about that bad, bad line that you think is so incredibly funny?
Yes.
Okay. Speak of it.
So, of course, the head nurse, but she calls herself the hospital administrator.
Oh, no, I thought you were going to talk about
the... I'm getting there. She calls and she offers her the job. So then... Fast forward to her, like, wrapping up her apartment and stuff. She tells her mother, I don't need to go shopping. I'll just get what I need when I'm there. And then the mom is saying, keep an open mind. Listen to your heart. Like, this is an opportunity to do something new. And so then she says, Alaska's awesome. And her father says, Alaska's the best 49th state we have. And he is such a, like... dry, deadpan deliver that I always think that's funny, but it's not as funny.
I think it's less funny.
Yeah, but you think this other line is funny, and it's not really all that funny.
It's not just the line, it's his facial delivery when he says it.
Okay, so she shows up in Anchorage where it's a balmy 7 degrees.
Yes.
And she's wearing like high heels. And so non-insulated shoes and a flimsy scarf and no gloves. And it's Pashmina. Obviously, yeah. And it's obviously summer in Alaska. So go ahead.
What's his name in this movie? Andy. So when Andy shows up, holding the sign.
And it's obviously love at first sight. He can't believe his eyes when he sees her.
Yeah. So she shows up. He says, okay, I'm here to take you to Garland. And
she says, where's the car? Take me to the car. And he goes, 300 miles due north.
Yeah. She goes, where's the car? And he goes, 300 miles due north. And then she said, but they told me it was adjacent. And he goes, that's Garland for you.
And she goes, adjacent means a car or a train ride away. Oh, yeah,
that's right. And then he says, that's Garland for you. Which is a line we use all the time. When something weird happens. Well, that's Garland for you.
That's right.
So he has to fly her there.
But before she'll get in the plane.
But before... Oh.
Your favorite line.
It's not going to translate.
Mine didn't translate.
Right.
But also it didn't translate because you don't think it's funny. So it fell on...
No, I think it's less funny than you think. You crack up.
I do. It's the only funny, quote unquote, funny line that her dad has. And her mom doesn't have any funny lines.
And because he makes a comment to Dr. Brunell saying, you know, we don't plan too much, you know, here in Alaska. And she says, oh, you just dismissed my whole life's philosophy. 10 minutes after meeting me. And he looks at her and goes, well, that certainly wasn't my intention.
That's right. Shall we get ourselves a little more adjacent to Garland?
Right. And they get to Garland, small town, holiday shipping.
They drive by Hattie's Diner twice.
Yes, they do.
Shipping is like a big
warehouse. It's the longest quarter mile you've ever seen.
Yes, because she like lives in this cute little log cabin within walking distance, except that she wears high heels that aren't insulated and she doesn't have the proper clothes.
But later she says... He offers her a ride, and
she's like, I can use the walk.
I can use the walk. It's only a quarter mile. And he says, oh, get in the truck. And they're driving for a few minutes. 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Shouldn't take 10 minutes to go a quarter mile.
He's like one of those sham taxi drivers.
Yeah.
He's got her in the truck. He's not going to let her go.
So Andy's father is Frank Holiday, CEO of Holiday Shipping.
Who looks a lot like Santa Claus, everyone.
Yes, played by Brian Doyle Murray.
That's the Brian Doyle Murray, yeah. Brother of Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, yes. One of the Murray brothers. And
once you know that, you can't help but see the family resemblance, just saying. Although I still think that Bill O'Donnell or whatever, what's his name?
Yeah, O'Donnell. I don't know. My iPad went out.
Yeah. What? Your iPad went out?
Yeah, battery was dying.
Close enough. Anyway, Brian Doyle Murray looks a lot like Santa Claus. I'm done playing.
He actually doesn't look that much like Santa Claus, but she just says that line when she meets him.
And he eats like Christmas cookies for breakfast at Hattie's. Hattie doesn't even have
She only makes them during Christmas season.
I know. His favorite cookies. And that's when she figures out that Andy is the son of Frank.
Right.
And they telegraph pretty early that Frank's health isn't awesome and that he's a workaholic and he's stressed out.
Right. And she goes to the hospital, finds out the hospital is all...
There are four people on staff.
Yeah,
what? There's four people on staff? No! There's five now that you're here.
Yes.
Says Billy, the head nurse, who is the quote-unquote hospital administrator, meaning... that she takes care of all the administrative tasks. So if you need to order anything, she could do it for you. Right. Which I thought was like a little bit of a bait and switch or whatever. But, you know, why that's Garland that? For you.
So. It goes on.
Yeah. She likes Andy. Andy likes her.
But there's something strange about the town that she's.
She sees like elves running away and. Then she's asked to like kill Rudy, a reindeer.
Right.
And she gets flowers from the whole town when she does that.
Comes because he got a hurt hand from making toys, hitting
himself with a tiny toy hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toy making hammer.
Oh.
It wasn't a toy hammer.
It was a tiny toy making hammer. Yeah. I'm just gonna say. It looked like a toy hammer I had when I was a kid.
So every time she's trying to get Frank to have a checkup, he won't have it because it's his busy season.
And she goes to make a house call on him in his office, and she overhears a heated discussion between Frank and his father.
Right.
No, Andy and his father,
Andy
Frank.
Andy and his father, Frank.
About how he really likes Dr. Brunel, Lauren, and there's something special about her. And... He accuses his father of just being afraid that he's not going to want to stick around Garland and take over the family business.
Right. So we find later her father does get her that fellowship.
Because the guy, that flaky Doctors Without Borders guy, turned it down.
She's going to leave. Big Christmas Eve festival. What makes her decide to stay?
Frank! She's on her way out of town. Andy's taking her reluctantly, but he says, I was right into town. I'll be your ride out. That's right,
because we normally fall asleep before the end. So the end is not as drilled into my brain as the beginning.
So, you know, he skipped over the whole picnic to watch the Northern Lights that she must have been freezing her butt off, literally, because he gave her like a little blanket to sit on and one little blanket to wrap herself up in. But he also gave her the tree topper. They went and got the tree, and they got the tree topper. He gave her the tree topper that was to remind her of the Northern Lights. There was all the colors. So she decides she's going to go to the fellowship. She packs up her bag. She takes the tree topper with her, and she's about to, like, call a cab or whatever. I don't know how the heck she was planning to get out of there without asking him for a ride. And he shows up, and he's like, no, I'll take you. And then they're on their way to the airport, and he gets the call that his dad collapsed. And she's like, turn around. We got to go. So she goes back, and she tells Frank, you better listen to me. I'm keeping you in here overnight. You're going to get a good meal. Not that his wife didn't make a good meal, but he was always supplementing it with Hattie's cookies, eating those for breakfast, etc. Which, you know, I would have done as a teenager, but like, dude, you're like 60 something. So she keeps him in and decides she's going to say, do what her mother always said, listen to your head, but follow your heart. And she decides she's going to stay in Garland.
Right.
Because people there need her.
And then they have a big Christmas Eve, Christmas Eve festival, and you learn that Frank really is Santa Claus.
Right. And that Rudy is all about flying him around the world.
Yeah.
And that they must have cut something out of that final scene because he's like, come on up here. And he says one word to her. He's like, no, get out of here. I got stuff to do.
Yeah. Come on up into the sleigh. And then he kicks her out of the sleigh.
Immediately. She sits down. He's like, get out. Yeah. But she's very happy to be there with Andy.
Right.
And she's going to stay in Garland for a while.
Yeah. That's Garland for you. Makes people fall in love with the town.
Yeah. Well, you know, she was from the big bad city of San Francisco and all that incredible money that her father must have had having that humongous house.
Yes.
In San Francisco.
Why do all parents in Hallmark movies have
like palatial
estates?
Yeah. That place is humongous. It must have cost $1 million. Well, at least multi-millions of dollars. So that's one of our favorite Christmas movies because the tension is not that like she lied about who she was or, you know, she didn't listen to him when he was trying to explain a misunderstanding. She was always driven and she had this opportunity and she thought she'd leave, but she had a change of heart and said, you know what? I'm needed here and I like it. And, you know, maybe I don't have to be, you know, number one surgeon in the whole country or whatever. Maybe helping people. And she does say to her dad, I've worked harder here than anywhere else in my life. So I think she found it rewarding. So that's why it's one of my favorites. Why is it one of your favorites?
Oh, it's fun. It's funny. That whole
Jim is not looking for any deep meaning.
No, I want some good funny lines and I want a lighthearted story that I can enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm the whole finding yourself and that is very secondary on my list of why I like certain Hallmark movies.
Yep. But I just have to say, when this whole shelter-in-place business started and they were doing a little bit of Christmas, I was really liking that. And now, ever since then, they've been doing some old ones. We've watched a few old ones that were replayed that we hadn't seen.
Right.
So we've taped those. Some of them we watched, some we haven't. I taped the Royal Matchmaker because, you know, that one, we like Joy Lenz, Bethany Joy Lenz in later movies. But I kind of miss the Christmas. So I guess I should be looking forward to Christmas in July because we got those June, there's like four new June movies coming and maybe they'll do Christmas in July.
Hopefully. Cross our fingers that they'll have a Christmas movie to pump out there.
Yeah. Not that we don't have like 30 or 40 of them.
I know, but those are ones we've seen. I mean, that's something new.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my thing. Are we rating the ones we love?
No, because we love it.
Yeah.
So that's about it.
Aside from that, we've been watching The Good Witch.
The Good Witch. We didn't say much about that. I'm not feeling this season of The Good Witch. It's the formula is wearing thin on me.
Yeah. So the whole thing about the Davenport Merriwick curse, you know, that's like, come on.
No, but I mean the whole formula of the show is wearing thin on me. It's starting to really recycle storylines.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. I was just kind of going with the other things that were bothering me.
Yeah.
you know, it doesn't necessarily bother me that, like, she always finds the thing that somebody's looking for. Or she always says the thing that, like, clues them in, that makes them take the walk, that's going to make them see the thing, that's going to spark the memory, that's going to make them remember that they love their husband, or they could have, like, they could throw a humongous party or whatever. But the thing is, the two things, this curse between what's her face, the flower shop woman,
right,
and the mayor of Blairsville, the Davenport, it's just like, come on, like, these two people were thwarted and there was a curse. Now Martha has bought the big house with, of the guy who, like, apparently set the curse in motion. So maybe that's the whole point of the season, is to then, like, debunk it. However, they brought in this new Merrowick woman who, like, this is the formula that bothers me.
A second cousin.
They always bring in these people who have, like, a past with the family, and they don't just show up and say, hey, guess what? I think I'm related to you.
Right.
You know, hey, my mom is so-and-so. Did you know? Oh, that was my second cousin. That's what a normal family would do. But this family is like, oh, I'm going to live here because it's an inn, and no one, and I'm going to hide the thing, and I'm going to look at my notes of what my supposed, like, family tree or whatever. Meanwhile, Cassie knows all along, and she's just waiting for the person to, like, come forward and reveal themselves as a Merrowick, or, you know. Come on. Why does that have to be a mystery?
And you were doubting when I said that Cassie was going to do some mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, I didn't think that she did actual witchcraft.
Yeah.
But she did actual witchcraft.
Right.
To teach the young second cousin a lesson.
Yeah, the young second cousin was cheating at darts.
Yep, because she was pulling some mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. And she throws a bullseye, and Cassie wiggles her nose like Bewitched or something. And
not that we can see.
And the dart falls out
of
the bullseye. And the
Merrowick cousin knows that Cassie did it.
Yeah.
But she learned her lesson.
That's right.
Whatever that was.
Exactly.
Thank God she, like, made a wager against a guy who isn't, like, craven or whatever, base enough to steal her actual truck on a wager. Because she bet, like, the clock face up against the clock against the truck.
Right. But they are continuing their streak of the most boring men you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, the boyfriend of the bistro lady.
Yeah.
Although I think he has MS or ALS or something.
I know, but he's...
He's a chaplain. He's too good. He's got no dimension.
He's boring.
Yeah.
Of course, Cassie's husband.
The most boring.
Mr. fucking white bread.
Yep.
Super bore.
And the Davenport guy isn't even all that exciting, even though he's the cursed love.
He's boring too.
He's like, you don't know our song. What's our song? Yeah. How do you not know our song?
Yeah, and they're all destined to die for being involved with Merrowick people.
Oh, I hope not. Well, just because the chief of police died, but he had a very dangerous job.
And her other husband, too.
What other husband?
She had two dead husbands.
I don't know about the first dead husband.
Didn't she have two dead husbands?
No.
Was it only the one dead husband?
I think so, but I don't know. But only on the movies has she had one dead husband.
Oh,
the chief of police.
One too many.
Well, yeah. I don't know.
That's right. Maybe it was only one dead husband.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what happened before she came rolling into town. You know, she traveled the world and went to Nepal and, you know, learned all this cool mystic stuff. She could have a trail
of dead husbands.
She could. She could be a black widow.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think so. I'm just saying.
You're right.
The men are kind of boring.
Yeah, so I'm a little bored of this. You know, they were introducing more mystery and witchcraft and stuff, and I'm going,
If more Martha, like, saying she's going to write a book, didn't that happen before? She was going to be, like, a talk show host or something, and that flopped.
Yeah.
Like, she's a legend in her own mind. Sorry, Martha. It's just, yeah, I'm tired of her thinking she's all that.
And she's a terrible mayor.
Yeah, no, but she's got to keep going to Cassie
for
advice.
Advice and having Cassie fix things.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, this season is a little less exciting. But I always save them until the end, and then we decide to delete them all.
Right.
I always think maybe I'm going to watch them again, and then I'm like, eh. So it's good entertainment for an evening. But that's, you know, sorry.
So
it's like 7 seasons or something, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's getting a little
stale.
The formula's wearing thin on me.
Well, and who has these humongous stones? That ridiculous heart-shaped ruby. And then what was the other one they found?
Yeah, that thing had a cost, like, that thing was probably worth like $1 million.
Yeah, they just like, oh, let's just leave it in this, like, this music box.
Or at least a few $100,000.
Oh, let's leave it in this music box. Nobody's ever going to find it. And that, remember that last season, that woman just like pocketed the heart of...
Yeah, well, it's a gigantic ruby. The heart
of Middleton.
It's a gigantic emerald.
And who knows what the other one's going to be.
Yeah, it's probably topaz.
Or diamond or something.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see. Sapphire? Come on, emeralds, rubies, and sapphires kind of go together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll let you know with the big reveal. Because there is a spot in that music box for a third thing, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, of course, we're going to watch it.
All right. Well,
that's it.
That's it. That's it for Hallmark's The Spot, episode 3.
Episode 3? That's amazing. Don't forget, send us emails if you agree with us, disagree with us, at destroymail.
Or just want to say hi.
Or just want to say hi. You don't have to have an opinion. Destroymail@gmail.com.
Yes.
And you can find episodes on iTunes or also on our website at damshow.co.
Right.
damshow.co.
Correct.
I can spell. It's
home
good.
Of Dam Junior Podcasting Network.
That's right.
The big 2-show network.
We're working on it.
Yeah.
We'll get Book of Melly going again.
Sure.
I just read I'm going to, hopefully at the end of the trilogy, maybe I'll want to talk about that.
Maybe.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Well, until next time, I'm Melly.
I'm Jim.
Have a good night.